sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Sean Sears, and on today's episode, we have an NL Central crossover episode to bring to you here with Locked On Cardinals host Lucas Smith and Locked On Reds host Jeffrey Carr. Two guys jump on here as we kind of take a look at the NL Central as a whole. We tried to get our two other hosts on, being Ethan Smith and Ben Larson, who hosts the Locked On Pirates and the Locked On Brewers show, which could not coordinate. So we'll have to get Ethan and Ben on another time. But we're able to get Lucas and Jeff on the show to talk a little bit about just what happened in this NL Central. We had four postseason teams, and they were gone within a week in this postseason. And the NL Central, while having the most postseason teams in this in the postseason this year, obviously wasn't probably the strongest division necessarily. And we take a look at what maybe offensively we could change as all three of us kind of bring those up, bring up the offense as a main point of contention. We also talk a little bit about the Cy Young conversation between Trevor Bauer of the Reds and Yu Darvish of the Cubs. So some good conversation, but it was interesting to hear both from Jeff and Lucas about what they think needs to change for their team. What are some of the challenges they'll be addressing in this offseason? Of course, we talk a little bit about this Cubs offseason and kind of hit on some of the things we've mentioned before, but it's interesting to get an idea of what this NL Central, or at least guys that will be covering these teams, what they think their teams will be doing in the NL Central, because it does kind of feel like a lot of teams are going to be waiting to see what other teams do. So it was a good conversation to have. So we break this episode up into two parts. So this first part, we're going to talk heavy offseason, what the plan is for each one of these teams, we think, and then get a little bit into the Darvish Bauer talk. And then in the second segment, which will come out tomorrow, we'll talk a little bit about some of the prospects in this division, particularly Key Brian Hayes and Dylan Carson. And then we talk a little bit about what the future could hold for 2021 and further for these clubs, what the long-term goals are for these guys right now, and maybe some big changes we could expect to come. And then we do hit on what are some of the positives and negatives we took away from 2020 and going into 2021. So fun episode. It was a full hour. We're going to break it up into two parts just to make it a little bit easier for you guys to digest. So here is that first part with Lucas Smith of Locked On Cardinals and Jeff Carr of Locked On Reds. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And they're improved now and more delicious than ever with six new flavors to add to their already 18 amazing flavors, being caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry baraka, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Some delicious flavors to go along with their coconut almond, raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, mint brownie is actually my favorite, double chocolate, orange, toffee, coconut, peanut butter brownie, all those flavors. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, easy, soft to chew, some of the best tasting bars I've had. But on top of that, the Built Bar is healthy. It's great for health conscious people like myself who are trying to lose weight or, you know, work out and still try and keep eating something good for you, but that is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. It's great for keto diets. It's a ton of just great options you can have while you're working out, while you're trying to eat a little bit healthier. Those are things Built Bar is built for. But I think one of my favorites is the cookies and cream. It's got 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar and 4 grams of net carb. I'm not very a super health conscious person myself. I like cookies and cream. I like stuff that tastes good, but I'm definitely trying to look for stuff to snack on throughout the day. Built Bar has been great because obviously first off, they sent me some bars immediately when they first started partnering with Locked On, and they're delicious, but it's nice to have something that I can eat on and chew throughout the day that isn't like, you know, Goldfish, something bad for me, pop, sugar, all this stuff that I'm probably, you know, constantly distracted with my refrigerator being directly behind me at my desk in my apartment. Having Built Bar here has helped me honestly lose a little bit of weight while I've been in quarantine, and it's honestly encouraged me to try and work out a little bit more. But right now, Built Bar has reset their promo code and is now offering a free cooler with purchase. So while supplies last, there's only about a week or so left in this, so obviously place your order soon, but go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Once again, that's promo code LOCKDOWN for $10 off at BuiltBar.com, the best tasting protein bar you will ever have.
All right, what's going on, Lockdown MLB fans? I am Sean Sears. I host the Lockdown Cubs podcast. Joined with me as well is two of the other Central, NL Central hosts, being Lucas Smith. And, of course, we've got none other than Jeff Carr from Lockdown Reds, who's got a magnificent voice. What is up, guys?
I feel like gypped in that intro. I don't know. I feel like Jeff got a much more glorious intro than I did.
Lucas is an also-ran.
Lucas has got a great voice too. I just feel anytime I get on a podcast with Jeff, I'm always put at ease, even if it's a stressful day talking with Jeff. Especially the last time we talked, we were talking about what was it? Cincinnati's got some like crazy awesome like French fry ice cream.
Yes. And I'm still been gypped on it. I still haven't had any of it. I really cannot wait for 2021, mostly for the s'mores fry box, but also for some Reds baseball too. We can talk about that, but I'm always up for talking about s'mores fry box.
I've been thinking about that. Every time I watch Reds highlights, I think about it now. It's I've never had it before, and I honestly don't even know if I'm like that excited about it. I just like it's all like it's like a, it's permanently associated in my brain, I guess. But obviously, the NL Central, we had four playoff teams, which was great, at least on paper. But when you kind of dive into these teams, like I'll go on record and say, I honestly think if there were two more weeks in the season, the Cubs might be third place in this division with how poorly they were playing going up into this run. But there's still some positives to take away. Jeff, obviously, I'll start with you here. The Reds, they came in with a ton of expectations. They were starting to kind of figure it out towards the end. That had to be so frustrating to see this team like kind of getting things, I guess, going in the right direction. And then the season abruptly ends. They get to the postseason. Doesn't quite work out. But I guess what was your takeaway from this Reds team?
It was so crazy because, like you mentioned, we go into opening day thinking, oh, man, this team can contend for the Central. And then throughout the first month of the season, it's like, this team can not be last? What are we talking about here?
Right.
And then they flip the script again in September, and they're like, oh, my gosh, if we'd have played more games. And then they go into the playoffs, and they're like, we're just going to continue to be bipolar and not score any runs. So I thought it was really weird. So we start the season with Matt Davidson and Travis Jankowski on the roster. They go through August. They figure out we don't need these guys. They're not good. Then we go into the playoffs. They add them. And I feel like that was almost like a moment. Whenever everybody on the Reds team looks at the playoff roster and like, oh, so these guys are back. So it's August again? So, yeah, it was really confusing. Really fun, though, in September. I mean, that run, that was a lot of fun to witness when we saw some of the guys actually play up to their potential, like Shogo, who got on base 45% of the time in the month of September. And we even saw our light-hitting defensive Gold Glove finalist catcher, Tucker Barnhart. He actually had an OPS over 950 in the month of September. So that was there was some good. There was some bad. Most of the good was pitching. And, it was a lot of fun to watch, but it just felt like after August, everybody was looking up at Chicago and like, okay, let's see if we can sneak into one of these – 8 playoff spots.
Yeah, it was, I mean, obviously 2020 is going to be a weird season no matter what. We knew that was going to be the case in March before we even knew a season was going to happen. But it's been weird. This Reds team obviously had a lot of potential. It was a bummer to see them maybe not reach it right away, but it was a lot of fun to watch towards the end. I said it throughout, even before they got on the run, that Reds team with their pitching, it was not a team you want to see, especially in a 3-game set with Sonny Gray and Trevor Bauer likely being 1-2 for game yes. 1-2. Like, oh my God, absolutely not. So there's a lot of potential there.
The annoying part was the pitching worked. It's just, you know, right. you got to score one run. You're not going to beat anybody 0-0.
Yeah.
That mind just got blown with that fact. Well done.
You know,
I'm good with the hashtag analysis.
Yeah. The key to baseball is scoring runs, guys. I don't know if you knew that. But Lucas, obviously St. Louis, it was a weird season for them. Very disjointed. You waited longer than I think anyone else did for their team to play baseball, at least real baseball a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there's positive things for this team, obviously, still. The Cardinals are it's tough to kind of figure out what that core is at the moment now, but at least pitching wise, you've got a stud in Jack Flaherty, and that alone makes you dangerous, I think, especially in the NL Central. But on the 2020 season as a whole, what were some positives and some maybe some things you were frustrated with this season, Lucas?
I think in a way it's almost similar to Cincinnati, where that pitching for St. Louis was incredible. Wainwright pitched like he did in 2010 again. You had KK Kim come in and pitch really well. The bullpen was locked down pretty much the entire season. From Gallegos, guys like Alex Reyes pitched really well. And then the offense was just abysmal, might be too harsh of a word, but at times it really didn't look like a Major League Baseball team was sitting. The leader in the Cardinals was like 7 home runs or something really low like that. I think Miller and O'Neill both had 7. This offense just had an inability to score enough runs. And I think that just because of how good the pitching was, and even when the starters had a rough day, it seemed like the bullpen always was able to come through. And it was just that hitting core was really weak. You didn't really have a guy that could back up Goldschmidt. So you saw his 330 average from the first couple weeks or so, weeks in their terms started in the Pittsburgh series, and had that little bit of a layoff, but his average dropped because pitchers didn't pitch to him. There was just no protection for Goldschmidt consistently throughout the year, and you had little guys step up, but it was just a bizarre year offensively, because again, at times it was like they were the 1927 Yankees, and at times it was like they were their double-A ball club. It was just really bizarre. And then the playoffs come, and they play the God-chosen talent of the San Diego Padres and Fernando Tatis, and they snuck a win in game one. And after that, with the pitching, you felt good, but the offense just disappeared in game three. So the pitching was the strong suit for St. Louis, and it really wasn't even Jack Flaherty, to be quite honest with you. He had a mediocre 2020 at best. It was guys like Wainwright, Kim, and Dakota Hudson all stepping up. So it was just a bizarre year offensively and pitching-wise. This team is top-notch. They might not have, like, the biggest names. Like, you're not going to have a 1-2 punch of totally blanking Bauer and Gray, but you're still going to have guys that can get you 5, 6, 7 quality innings.
I've been wanting to ask you since our last crossover, is Kim a magician? Because he's probably my favorite player in this division outside of the Reds. And he was just so much fun to watch, and dude wasn't burning up any radar guns, but he was a magnificent pitcher.
I mean, it's a cliche, but the dude knows how to pitch. He's got a really good, breaking stuff. And yeah, he just found holes in people's swings. And did he give up some hard contact at some points to get lucky outs? You can make that argument if you look at the numbers. But at the end of the day, he got outs. And he's not, weird isn't the right term I want to use, but that's the word that comes to mind. He's very superstitious. the first start, he like warms up like religiously whenever the minute man hits 0 on it, whatever given time. And he didn't do that on his first start and pitched awful. And that was his biggest critique of himself going into his next start, that he has to start his bullpen at a better time. So he's just real meticulous in the way he does things. But he got results for pretty much every start of the season except for 1 or 2. But yeah, he was really fun to watch because it was kind of a head scratcher as to why he was getting so many outs, but he got all the outs he needed to get.
Yeah, Kim's a fun guy. Like you said, he does give up hard contact, but he's rocking a 50% ground ball rate. So that's awesome. They can pound it in the ground as much as they want if he's going to drill that up. There is some signs of regression. Like, his FIP is 388, so obviously he benefits a ton having a guy like Colton Wong behind him, Paul DeJong, Tommy Edman at third. Those guys obviously, and Paul Goldschmidt, all Gold Glove caliber, former Gold Glove winners. So. That's pretty solid too. But yeah, Kim fit like a glove, especially like you said. I mean, struck out just under 6 batters per 9 innings. Like, he wasn't mowing dudes down. He was just outsmarting them. And that was impressive to see. We could talk about the Brewers for a second, even though none of us really are fans of them or follow them or like them or anything. No, I'm just kidding. the Brewers were an interesting team this year. Just not a ton going their way, but we're still really pesky. They had one of the best bullpens in baseball again in a year that everyone kind of thought they might not have a great bullpen. But God, I don't know about you guys. Yeah, Jesus. Oh my God. Devin Williams, incredible. like insane. The only downside to a season is why the heck wasn't that dude on the postseason roster was my only question. But Devin Williams, incredible. Obviously a short season, or not a short season, but a poor season from Christian Yelich, who I think he was coming to his own a little bit towards the end of this season. But you look at like how much we actually played, like realistically, this was like the 60-game season was essentially March and April, or April and May of baseball. Like, these guys could have easily turned it around. But I don't know about how you guys felt, but the Brewers just seemed like they weren't legitimate, but they were just rather pesky throughout the year.
Devin Williams was a cheat code, man.
Like, oh, God. I hate what that guy.
Every time the Brewers took a lead into the eighth inning, or maybe even the seventh inning, because they like to stretch him out more than one inning at a time, it was like bye-bye baseball. Like, you're not going to see a comeback from your team because they're going to have Devin Williams and Josh Hader, and the game is over at in the seventh inning if the Brewers are up even by one. It was crazy. And then on the flip side, if you took a lead, really into the later innings, they really didn't have a ton of answers to throw on you. So they were good at holding leads in the last three, four innings of a game. But overall, the lineup, I thought they did a decent job of replacing the bats that they lost. Not exactly, one for one comparison. I know they had trouble with Justin Oak and stuff like that, but they were still able to find the runs, and they remained a pesky team. They're going to be interesting coming into 2021. What moves do they make to kind of fill out their roster?
I think one thing that hurt them a lot too, that for my looking at the team, really wasn't talked about, was Lorenzo Cain opting out of the season.
Yes.
I think he's one of my favorite players to watch. Whenever they signed him 2 years ago in the offseason, either a day after or a day before trading for Christian Yelich, I was like, oh my God, this team is for real, you know? And I just think that not having your starting center fielder always hurts, because you got to be strong up the middle, and his bat and his IQ in the lineup is just it's irreplaceable. But I think that this team was pesky. I think that although they got swept by the Dodgers, I thought that they played them pretty close for the most part. I think for whatever reason, Ryan Braun decides to turn into Babe Ruth when he plays the Cardinals, and he doesn't when he plays anybody else, to my knowledge. So that's annoying. But I just think that this team is not quite there. And I just don't know what their payroll situation is, but I just don't know if they're going to have any sort of money or any sort of trading chips to really improve this team in the offseason.
Yeah. To your point about – oh, sorry,
Jeff. No, go ahead, Jeff. What were you saying?
To your point about Yelich with a slow start, though, I got to admit a little bit of relief on that, because he in 1 year he once hit for the cycle twice against the Reds. So I was okay with him not being good this year.
Yeah, you said, Lucas, I know you're talking about Ryan Braun. I don't know what it is, man, but it feels like in moments where he can really just be a big jerk to the Cubs, and that's me putting it very nicely, the moments where he can step up and make a big-time moment against the Cubs, it always seems like he does that. But, yeah, to him and not seeing Christian Yelich be the guy that mashed baseballs the last 2 years was strange, and I'll take it again next year when he's facing the Cubs. But I hope he bounces back. Yeah. He's such a fun guy. The Brewers are such an interesting club because the last 4 years, I feel like everyone's been yelling at them to go get starting pitching. And then all of a sudden they turn around and it's like, well, we have Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff. Like, do you guys want more pitching? And it's kind of like, yeah, what in the world? Like, I'm glad these guys figured it out finally. But like, what took so long, I guess? But they're such a weird group because they are small market to some extent. I know their front office is trying to do similar things that Tampa Bay has, and they haven't quite panned out quite yet. But they're so different than a lot of other teams because they will approach the game in ways that you just haven't thought of yet. And I always appreciate that. So, but
tell us about the Cubs. How about we go smooth transition into the Cubs?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So then you talk about the Cubs. The 2020 season started out great. Obviously going 13-3 was super fun. And then it wasn't quite so much fun after that. The offense kind of broke again. We've been kind of saying the same narrative the last 4 years. But this offense looked really bad this year, and it came down to the Cubs' core four guys being Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, and Wilson Contreras. To some extent, he hit a little bit better, but mainly Kyle Schwarber. Those four guys just not being who they were the last few years really hurt them. Chris Bryant just couldn't get healthy again. It brings 2020 down to a screeching halt here, because you look at what's coming next and you don't really know a lot of guys that are going to be free agents after 2021, 2022. Theo Epstein's likely leaving after the season once his contract is done. The Cubs kind of have to figure a direction. And I think they wanted to do this maybe this last offseason, but couldn't because of the Chris Bryant grievance. So there's a lot of questions that come into this year now. And realistically, the Cubs probably won't have answers until they get an idea of what the market's going to look like. But I would assume the Cubs probably trade one of their top four guys, being Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, or Schwarber, possibly Contreras too. I think all those guys, I would assume one or two of those guys probably leave. So a different team probably in 2021, maybe, for once.
I was going to say, with the last year of Theo, do you expect it to be a lot more quiet than in years past? Or do you think that he's going to make moves with the future in mind?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Epstein, he's like arguably already the best executive in baseball history, probably sports history. Like, just ending the World Series for the Red Sox and Cubs droughts, like, that alone is enough. But obviously done a lot of good things. I have a hard time seeing him just like sitting on his hands and not doing anything, especially his last year. If he thinks his team is competitive, I see him trying to be more aggressive. What that means though, exactly, I have no idea, because they have, I mean, all their assets depreciated this year, like outside of maybe Wilson Contreras, like a lot of guys didn't build up their stock. The best asset you have probably trade-wise would be your two starting pitchers and Yu Darvish and Kyle Hendricks, but they're not trying to blow it up. They're trying to remain competitive this year while also making sure they stay competitive post-2021. So I have a hard time seeing Epstein kind of throw it in the towel a little bit, but at the same time too, if this team falls apart at the deadline, I could see Epstein maybe being a part of the trade deadline conversation and maybe exiting afterwards if this team is bad next year. So, I think it all comes down to who gets DFA'd, really. I think that's where the Cubs are going to get the most bang for their buck, take some of the scraps in other teams and hope they can maybe reinvigorate their career. That's probably the direction they go. But I guess off-season talk a little bit for the Cardinals, Lucas. I guess if you had to pick one player right now outside of, I guess, maybe not worrying about money and all the factors going in with COVID, if there were a guy you could pick right now as a free agent to come plug into the Cardinals, who is it right now?
For me, free agent wise, it's going to be George Springer. And I know that he comes from the awful Astros and all that good stuff. But I just think that outfield as a whole this season, that was abysmal for the Cardinals, and I'm not afraid to use it in this context anymore. but it was, especially center field, Harrison Bader, people, you know, he hit like 220 or I forgot to pull up stats, but he hit like 220 this year, and people called it a resurgence of a year. I was like, 220 is if that's a resurgence, then you need to find something else to do in center field. And I just think George Springer, you know, and for all the hate that he gets and for all the hate the Astros get, it was well deserved. But I just think him as a leadoff bat, him as a staple in center field for St. Louis, he's the guy that I think that they should go after. Now, will he? Will they? I don't think though. Think so. I think that they go after more of the lower tier guys, maybe a Jock Peterson to platoon in left field. I think they should go after Justin Turner as an upgrade at third base. But I think it's more likely that they go out of the system to get an outfielder than it is for them to go out of the system to get an infielder. And who knows what the trade market's going to look like again with all this COVID 2020 stuff. Who knows what the offseason is going to look like at all. If people want to stay pat because 2020 was such a weird year and they don't trust it and they want to see what 2021 is, who knows? But I think that my guy is George Springer, because for me, in 2021, an outfield of Dylan Carlson in left, Springer in the center, and I guess Fowler in right. I'm okay with that outfield for 2021 because you're paying Fowler so much money anyways, you might as well play him. So if my guy is George Springer, the realisticness of that is probably slim, but my guy is George Springer for the Cardinals.
I like that. That'd be a great fit.
I think so.
Jeff, I'm kind of looking into the crystal ball a little bit, Lucas. Do you see Michael Liberatore making an impact next season?
There were talks of that, especially because he was like the guy that pitched like the not spring training, but the off-campus pitching whenever people were COVID-19. Like, he was at the simulated games. He was the guy that pitched, and there's no video of it, but they said that he was impressive. Like, Molina was impressed whenever he had to go get his rehab. DeYoung was impressed when he got his rehab after getting COVID. There's a really legit chance that Liberatore makes a starting rotation bid, at least, in spring training. And some people think that he's going to be the fifth starter for St. Louis in 2021. Is that rushing it? I mean, you probably have to talk to RM Layton if he's being rushed or not. But I think that Liberatore has a really good chance to make a significant push for a starting rotation next year and a significant impact.
And then follow up to if Liberatore is in the rotation, is De Leon anywhere? Because I want to see a game where it's like Liberatore and De Leon pitching, because then it'd just be the most elegant names on the baseball diamond.
I think that there's, you know, with, there's a good chance, whether I'm dreaming because of the names or what, but there's a decent chance that with who they are, that they piggyback each other. Max Schilt doesn't like that term, but I think that De Leon has shown he can go six or seven in a couple different starts, but I think his role right now is more suited for a 3-4 inning guy. And then maybe for 2021, you use Liberatore as that backup, or you flip it depending on, you know, kind of a mini opener, if you will. But that would be quite, and you're right, an elegant way of having your pitchers in a game. Liberatore and Ponce De Leon.
Yeah, geez, man. They sound like they should be, like, leading the Ottoman Empire, not the rotation for the St. Louis Cardinals. Jeff, obviously, the Reds made some, I mean, uncharacteristic big splash moves last offseason. Are you expecting that to happen again? I guess what's happened with Nick Castellanos? What's your feel for this offseason?
I think this offseason is going to be a lot more like what Reds fans are used to before these past 2 years. When you've got two reasons being that they have spent a ton over the last couple of seasons, but also you've got the COVID bankroll. Who knows what that's going to be and what it's going to look like for the Reds going into free agency. And that's kind of one of the reasons I'm not super bullish on them bringing Trevor Bauer back. It's not for any reason. I mean, obviously, Reds fans have loved Trevor Bauer this season. I've got myself a Bauer-Weiser t-shirt, king of strikeouts. But, you know, he's going to cost so much money. There's going to be somebody that's going to throw $30, $35 million at him for a year, or maybe even a multiple-year contract that the Reds just can't match. So I'm not banking on that. Sure, I'm still hoping for it, but I'm not expecting it. So with that being said, I don't think there's going to be a ton of moves. Plus, they've already got in-house guys that they can plug into the rotation. And while they're not as good as Bauer, because Bauer should win the Cy Young, I think that they're still going to be solid rotation-wise with the guys that they've got in-house. So with that being said, the one move that I'm looking for them to do, and the one move that I'm trying to champion and try to, you know, osmosis my mind to Nick Kroll's mind, is go for Andrelton Simmons. I want Andrelton Simmons so much, because he's not going to cost as near as much as Trevor Bauer, but he's not going to cost like a whole bunch of money per year. Like I think they could probably get him for about $9 million, something like that. He will be the best defender on the team, obviously the best defender in the infield, and he'll be able to shore up a spot in the bottom third of the order. The bottom third of the order for the Reds was just such a black hole this season, very inconsistent based on who was in there. And you look at the guys that the Reds tried to plug in at shortstop, whether it be Freddie Galvis, who flirted with the Mendoza line all season. Then you had the young stud, Jose Garcia, who is the shortstop of the future, but not the shortstop of 2021, because he was so overmatched at the plate. He's a very good defender, but he's not good at the plate. I think that you plug Simmons in there for a year, maybe even work Garcia in toward the end of August, September, something like that. But you can bridge the gap between what we've got now, which is a bunch of question marks at shortstop, and the future, which is Jose Garcia. As far as the rest of the roster goes, it's probably not going to change very much. I don't think Nick Castellanos opts out. He's going to have a hard time opting out of his current deal and getting a better deal after getting on base less than 30% of the time in 2020. I know that people are going to say, well, shortened season, maybe they kind of temper their expectations with the statistics, but it's not as if he can walk into any sort of contract negotiation and be like, look how good I was in 2020. He had a lot of inconsistent numbers. So I think that he at least stays for one more year. He does have an opt-out at the end of 2021 as well, so he can kind of bet on himself a little bit that he'll be better in 2021 and then test the free agent market next season, which is what I think most Reds fans were expecting whenever he signed, because they gave him two opt-outs, which is weird, right? Like most guys, they only get one opt-out, but they wanted Castellanos so much, they're like, we'll give you two. And so I think that that's something that we're going to see. And Well, I can throw this bombshell out there here too. I saw something today, and we can talk about it more throughout the rest of this podcast. But I'm hearing that the DH needs to be renegotiated to be a thing in 2021. Like, yeah. As is, there's not going to be a DH in the NL, which is going to be kind of a thorn in the side for the Reds lineup. So I don't know. What are you guys hearing about that? And Sean, what are the Cubs going to do?
Dude, that is a wonderful question. I'm really glad you asked me. The DH, yes. The DH right now, as stands, does have to be renegotiated. I think everyone just assumed it would probably be added on, but I have seen some, questions about, whether the National League can or will bring that back. I would assume there would be too much upset National League teams for the DH not to return, so I would assume that's back. But that would really throw a wrench into a lot of things. In terms of what the Cubs can do, I guess if I had to pick one guy, there's two guys I'd probably really love to add to this roster. The one who I don't really see being an option but would love to see it happen would be DJ LeMahieu. You kind of mentioned it at the reason why, mainly, Jeff, is the bottom half of the Cubs lineup was good, actually, but over the last couple of years is brutal. It was the top portion of the lineup that wasn't great, but getting someone like DJ LeMahieu in the Cubs lineup helps because he's a high contact bat, but he also drives the ball well. He hits high average. He was right up there with Tim Anderson this year once again for the American League batting title. He plays pretty good second base. It's not anything special defensively, but obviously that bat, it's just a lot different than what the Cubs have in their lineup. They need those high average, high contact guys that can put the ball in the air. They've got contact guys in Elmora and Nico Horner, but they're really good at putting the ball on the ground and not elevating. So getting someone like DJ LeMahieu helps kind of change the focus because you kind of look at the rest of that lineup and it's kind of been the Cubs issue the last couple of years, even though it was kind of put out as a strength, but the Cubs could conceivably put any hitter from one through six or maybe even seven in any spot in that lineup. And you could say, yeah, that makes sense. And that's great to some extent, but the teams these last couple of years have figured out the Cubs all kind of struggle on the same pitches because they're conceivably the same hitter one through six. It's all power hitter who will walk and take their pitches, but is pretty much looking for fastballs. DJ LeMahieu helps change that a little bit. So I'd be interested to see him sign. The other guy I really want, and I think the Cubs, if the DH, this is entirely contingent on the DH. So if they don't have the DH, this would suck. But I would love to see a guy like Nelson Cruz come to the Cubs. A guy that's never really been a guy the Cubs could go after. The DH, the straight DH type of guy. Putting him in that Cub lineup, I mean, that dude's just going to hit home runs. And that's all he's kind of done these last couple of years. He's hit nearly 40 home runs the last couple of years. But what's been encouraging as he's gotten older, he's actually become a better hitter. He's hitting for a higher average these last couple of years with the Twins. His BABIP's higher. On-base percentage just still hovering near 400%. 400, excuse me. So, that's incredible. That's exactly what the Cubs would need. And it's the exact type of hitter they've never been able to really go after. So it'd be cool to see that. Will that happen? Probably not. We'll more than likely see a mid-level signing. Jonathan Scope's probably the guy that's realistically going to come in on this Cubs team, but that type of fringe player. But I would love to see them swing for the fences and sign a Nelson Cruz, especially 38, 39. He's not going to ask for a lot of money. It's probably a one-year deal. He either hits a bunch of home runs or strikes out a lot. Either way, you've got the same issue ahead if it doesn't work out. So,
yeah, I think with the DH, again, my thoughts on it are probably, I'm in the minority for most people. I don't like the DH. I get it. I get why it's a thing. I'm more of a traditionalist, but I won't get on my soapbox right now because I have a question for you guys. Sure. You guys can get your stats on Bauer and Darvish out now if you guys don't have them up already because the Cubs and Reds both have Cy Young contenders. And I'll be the moderator for this question. whether you actually think your guy's going to win or not, I want to hear your guys' arguments. Jeff, why you think Trevor Bauer will win? And Sean, why you think Yu Darvish will win? And because I got a lackluster introduction, Jeff, you get to go first.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll take it.
So I love it. So Bauer in 11 starts this season was absolutely phenomenal. He had a 1.73 ERA. He did have two complete games. Now, I will allow that one of those complete games was in a seven-inning doubleheader, but his biggest start of the season came against the Brewers late in September on 3 days' rest, in which he came in and was near perfect. He gave up a couple of base runners in that game, but was absolutely phenomenal. I don't necessarily know if they go crazy with the ERA plus, but his ERA plus was 276. Like, that's insane to me. His FIP at 288 says he was getting a little bit lucky, but come on. I mean, that's not that big a luck difference there. Strikeouts per nine at 12.3. And overall, he was a guy that the Reds could look for to be the stopper. You know, we always talk about guys in the rotation that if some of the other guys have faltered and if the Reds are on a bit of a losing streak, you throw Bauer in there and you get things rolling on the winning side. And he was able to do that for the team. But overall, I think when you look at his body of work, and I'm not a mathematician, so I couldn't figure this part out, but 100 strikeouts in 11 starts probably figures to be really good over the course of a full season. So I look at him, and I think that he is the favorite to win this NL Cy Young.
Yeah, I mean, I for what it's worth, I agree with you, Jeff. But for the sake of this argument, I will say Yu Darvish, just incredible. You look at the body of work, what he was putting together before the 2017 or 2018 season, and just didn't quite look like himself. Last year, we saw him in the second half really start to figure it out, and he was essentially the same guy he was in that second half. Just incredible. Nasty, nasty stuff. A 2.01 ERA, which was great. He was worth three WAR this year. He led the Cubs, which is nuts. I think the most ridiculous stat I could see for him in 2018, Yu Darvish struck out about 11 batters per nine innings, but walked just under five batters per nine innings. In 2020, he struck out about 11 batters again, but walked 1.66 batters per nine innings. Left on base percentage at nearly 84%. His home run fly ball rate, which had skyrocketed for the 4 years in a row from 12 to 15 to 17 to 22.8 last year, went down to 8.8. Darvish just minimized all of his mistakes. And on top of that, he throws 11 freaking pitches on just any day. And he'll just pick up a ball, throw a pitch a couple times, and says to his catcher, Victor Carantini, yeah, let's mix this in today. I'm going to throw a knuckleball today, like, because – like, that's nuts. And it's crazy to see just when he came to the Cubs just 2 years ago, wasn't quite himself, only managed 8 starts. Chicago was ruthless. They replaced Jake Arrieta with Yu Darvish, who made 8 starts and looked awful in all of them. Walked more batters than he, nearly walked more batters than he struck out to turn into this player he is now at 34 years old. It was just special, a special year. He was absolutely dominant. You could say, honestly, as great as Yu Darvish was this year, that Kyle Hendricks might have been more, maybe not consistent, but maybe more big in certain moments. He stepped up a little bit in times when the Cubs needed him to, but Darvish was just absolute nails all season. And as great as the season as Trevor Bauer had, if you were going to hang your hat on something for Darvish, I really think it's just that he's come so far from where he was, where it looked like this contract could be a nightmare, to turn it into a guy the Cubs see as an asset for the next couple of years, which is special.
Yeah.
I think
go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, sorry, moderator. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You can respond, Jeff.
No, I mean, I think that Yu Darvish really was a guy that shut down, not that everybody shut down the Reds lineup most of the time this year, but whenever he was on the mound, it was really hard to see how the Reds were going to score runs against a guy like that. And kind of like you mentioned, it was like every other game you heard, because I think Yu Darvish pitched a couple of times against the Reds. So every time the Reds announcers were watching him pitch, they're like, what's that pitch? Where'd that come from? Right. I think it broke up and then it came down. What's going on here? But yeah, overall, he was a lot of fun to watch and definitely the main contender. Like, I know that I'm sure there's Mets fans out there that probably think Jake DeGrom should be in the conversation, but I think it's a 2-horse race at this point.
Yeah, I feel the same way, especially since DeGrom's won it the last couple of years. Like, I get, you know, you don't want to not give a guy an award if he earned it, but I think this year especially, it's very clearly Trevor Bauer is one, and Darvish is probably maybe 1A or 2 there, but those guys have been fun. And like you said, I think the big thing for Darvish or for Bauer is that he just came in moments when the Reds needed him to win and pulled out a freaking win for an offense that just couldn't get it together. For to know Bauer was like, yeah, I can go 8 and not give give up a run for you, that's huge.
Plus, he made a lot of really good GIFs this year.
Yes, he's very funny. I love watching his YouTube channel. He's great at breaking down pitchers, except for when he's giving Javi Baez shade. He's having a rough season, Trevor. He doesn't have video in the dugout, all right?
Oh, I don't want to hear that excuse. I don't want to hear it. That's ridiculous. I think both these guys – it's fun to talk about winning awards because the Cardinals won't win money this offseason, so I appreciate you guys indulging me in that conversation. But it's just funny that you look at – you know, both these guys had not only – because you mentioned Darvish had a really good year in his first year, really good as a Cub. He had his best season really since 2013, in which he finished second in the Cy Young. And Bauer really had his first good quality full season since 2018 as well. So both these guys kind of resurged themselves, if that's the proper use of that word. Both these guys have had the talent for a long time, it feels like, especially Darvish. Whenever I play baseball, I had this pitching instructor that said, whenever Yu Darvish is healthy, there's no question as to who's the best pitcher in the game because of his ability to throw the 11 pitches and all these other different things that he talked about that went over my head, which is why I don't play baseball anymore. but when you look at how effective Darvish is with all 11 pitches, because I feel like sometimes guys try to throw 5 pitches and that's too much because they can't master it all 5. For Darvish to have some sort of mastery on 11 pitches, I think is absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. And that deserves a lot of respect. But I tend to agree with you guys. I think Bauer will win this. He's only 5-4, but I think wins are starting to get less and less, more and more obsolete nowadays. I mean, I think DeGrom won it a couple years ago with like 9 wins or something like that. Hernandez won it 10 years ago with like 13 wins or something crazy like that. So I think that the wins and losses don't matter. When you look at all the statistics, I mean, Jeff, you ran off a couple of them. He led the league in ERA, led the league in ERA plus, led the league in WHIP, led the league in lowest hits per 9 innings among qualifiers. So I just think that Bauer does get the Cy Young nod, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, those stats always dictate to who's dominating a game, and clearly Bauer did it just about every start.
And just for the sake of looking at the whole idea of obsolete pitcher win and loss record, there was a couple of games. I remember one in particular that Bauer pitched 7 2/3 innings. It was 0-0. They bring in Michael Lorenzen to relieve him for one out. And then the next inning, the Reds score a bunch of runs. Yeah. And Michael Lorenzen gets the win. It's like, okay, he wasn't the guy that, like, willed them on to victory, but yeah, whatever. I guess we'll throw the number in the win column at him. But I've always been against pitcher win losses.
Well, that will do it here for the first part of our conversation with Jeff Carr and Lucas Smith from Locked On Reds and Cardinals. As we take a look at the NL Central, we'll have the second part of our conversation on Tuesday for their episode, and then hopefully we should have an episode with Ryan later this week as we dive into the pitching as the offseason continues here for the Cubs. And of course, we'll have a couple other updates coming with those as well. The Cubs do have some news about their player and scouting development departments, as well as what the future could hold for some of those positions. The Cubs did, it sounds like, reportedly cut over 100 employees. We'll talk about what the longevity of the sport may be and some of the directions this Cubs team might be leaning towards these next couple of years. So keep an eye out for that interview or that conversation with Ryan later this week. But that will do it here for today's episode of Lockdown Cubs. Make sure you subscribe to Lockdown Cubs or whatever podcast app you use, whether it's Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app. Wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. With that, you guys enjoy the rest of your day. And as always, go Cubs.